This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 39. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books, whether it's epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, grimdark, you name it, we've got it here on the show with the best and brightest authors from all the corners of the fantasy book world. So we're going to get into that in just a second with our author interview, but let's kick off with my weekly update. I'm wrapping up Cybers Underground, Book 3 in the Sapiens Run trilogy right now, and as this series closes out, we get closer to the release of Book 2 in that series. Cybers Escape will release at the end of June on the 28th. I'm really excited about it. It's already up for pre-order for a reduced price, so if you want to get it on a reduced price basis, go ahead and pick it up now on pre-order. You can also get the first book, Cybers Change, which is already out and available wherever you buy books, ebooks, or audiobooks. As always, if you're interested in more information about what I'm up to, check out my fan group over on Facebook. You'll find that by looking for Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers and on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. Today on the show, we have MJ Vieira joining us, and MJ is the author of the Veritas series, the Mangian Chronicles, and various short stories. The Reader's Digest version of her life, as she says, is thus. She grew up in Maine, showing horses and being a tomboy. She showed her ponies all over the nation, then went to college in Ohio, where she received her degree in Western Equestrian Studies. MJ now lives in Missouri with her husband and son. Let's check out my interview with MJ. It's coming right up. Hi, MJ. Welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's really great to have you on the show today.
Hi there. It's great to be here. I'm so excited.
So why don't you introduce yourself to the readers and listeners to the podcast out there. Tell us a little bit about your background and a little bit about who you are.
Well, as I said, my name is MJ, last name is Vieira, and I am originally from Maine. I have moved to Southwest Missouri recently, and I've been trying to get used to the change in climate down here. let's see, a little bit about me. I began my life as a horse rider and did a lot of American Quarter Horse shows and 4-H. And that is actually what my college background is in. I'm a Western Equestrian Science major. So not too much I can do with that major at the moment. So in the spare time, I read a ton and listened to a lot of music. And I began writing when I was a teenager to actually kind of escape some things going on in my life that were very hard to deal with. And it just kind of kept on developing. I got a lot of encouragement from the now dean of English at the University of Findlay, where I went to college. He really told me to keep writing, keep going, and I did. And I finally released my first novel about 5 years ago, and that is called Lux. And I am a fantasy horror, and I really consider myself a dark fantasy writer.
I would classify that. I started reading Lux and have enjoyed what I've gotten into so far. I would almost even characterize it as dark fantasy, horror, maybe even a touch of, I don't want to say romance, but there is some graphic stuff in there.
Yes, there is. It's and that's kind of the funny part about it. When I wrote the book, I wasn't focusing on the romance or erotica part of it, if you want to call it that. I don't consider myself an erotica author, but I do have parts of that in most of my books. And it was something that a few readers have pointed out to me, just, wow, that was an intense scene. And I'll be like, I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry at the same time. So I do have one YA book or youth, a book I'm working on that will be, you know, clean of that. But I do tend to write on the darker side of things for sure.
Well, and, you know, I don't read a lot of like heavy romance or erotica, whatever you want to call it. And but I didn't mind it. I thought it was well written and appropriate to the story. So, and I think that's the thing, you know, kind of when I look at fantasy that has that kind of element to it, Is it gratuitous or is it something that fits within the scene? And certainly what I've read so far, it completely fits within the setting you've put it in.
Oh, I really appreciate that. That's how I feel about it too. I have some friends that are erotica writers and I appreciate what they can do because it's not something I can certainly write about a lot of. But I also feel that for my work, I always want there to be a deeper storyline to it, not just that. So I tend to try to just kind of add that in there where it's needed.
So let's talk a little bit more about Lux because it's an interesting premise. How would you describe the story from your angle if you were to describe it to a reader?
That's a hard one. I've had a lot of people ask me that. You think I'd be better about answering it by now. But to me, it's about a woman who finds herself in a completely different world. Everything she knew from her previous life is wrong. She's told it's a lie. So she wakes up in this world and she's the captain of a guard for a king that she assumes is a good person and then a worthy leader. And she finds out deeper into the book that things are not what they seem. The rebels that she's fighting actually have a real cause, and that the person that she's been supporting may not be as just as she thinks he is. You find out later in the book that he really is not a good person. And then the other characters within the book surrounding her, everything you think you know is pretty much flipped. So it's really a journey of her trying to figure out who she is and what her role in this world really is. And I think that's really where I was going from a personal standpoint with it. I mean, I'll be honest, I wrote this in a part of my life where I didn't know who I was. And for me, that was kind of a lot of what I put into the book, was just these challenges I was facing to try to figure out, okay, who am I? What is going on? Everything I thought I knew isn't. And I put that into Jade, the main character's story. It took on a whole another life of its own, not going to lie. But that's kind of my biggest focus on the book, is it's really a lot of self-discovery.
I would say I picked up on that definitely. And you know, you gave a lot of description about sort of what sort of happens throughout the book, but I don't consider it spoilers because you really, in the very beginning, you make Malum to appear very dark and not a nice guy. and so I don't think that anybody's going to be surprised when she suddenly discovers that he's not who she thinks he is.
Right. Yeah. I didn't try to chameleonize him very much. I think it's always a matter, and this is just something I've always enjoyed when I read or watch a movie. Like, not that I identify with a villain, but I always want to know what makes a villain tick. Why are they the way they are? No one really is ever born inherently evil. So to see why he's doing what he's doing later in the book, you're kind of like, okay, that makes a little more sense. And he doesn't see himself as evil, you know. I mean, I don't think any truly evil person does. They're not evil. Everyone else is bad. But it takes her a little while to figure out some of the horrible things she's doing for him isn't for a good cause. The ends don't justify the means.
And you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of people can make one-dimensional bad guys. I don't even call them evil because they're just bad guys. And, mm-hmm. you know, so they're just foils for the main character to kind of run into and have something happen with. But they aren't really in-depth characters that have any kind of driving motivation that makes you, I don't want to say sympathize, but there should be something about the evil bad guy, the evil main character that is almost something you can identify with. Like mm-hmm. you can, and that, I think that's what makes a good antagonist is that.
Oh,
that,
I agree.
That person that you feel like, oh my gosh, you know, if I were put in that situation, what would I do? Kind of question that mm-hmm. crosses your mind.
I try to drive from that a lot. I agree. That's kind of my biggest thing. And if I'm watching a movie or reading a book and I feel, you know, the antagonist is just, for lack of a better word, lame, I have a hard time continuing with it because I'm like, well, okay, that's just, you know, it's something like you just said for the good guy to fight. Well, what's driving that? Nothing? Well, then I'm bored. So I try really to make sure that my antagonists and, you know, my heroes all have a pretty in-depth, deep backstory because, you draw on it through the whole story. And if you're reading that and you can kind of get these glimpses of what makes this character tick, I think it really adds to the entire experience.
Now, you mentioned that, you know, Jade was kind of a reflection of something you were going through as you wrote this story. Is that something you find yourself doing when you've written the other books you've written and the other stories you've been involved with, that you find yourself writing about where you are at that given point in time?
I do draw a lot from personal experience, but it isn't always a reflection of where I am at that time. So Lux, I mean, I'll be honest, the first chapter, which I know a lot of people, it confuses people when you first read the first chapter, because you start in like a very modern time and then you flip to this dream sequence and it's like, what's going on? But that first chapter I actually wrote to the song Monster by Skillet. I was listening to the music, and that's a lot of what I, when I write, I listen to music. I have total playlists set up to characters and scenes and books, and my music's a little eccentric, but I wrote that first scene and then it just sat there for 2 years, and I picked it back up suddenly and I'm like, okay, this is a way for me to kind of deal with what's going on in my life. I'm just going to start writing. And as I wrote it out, people, you know, I kind of sent it to a couple people. I'm like, you should keep going with this. This is really good. So while Lux was a way for me to deal with what was going on, it wasn't quite always right at that moment what I was going through. And I'd say the same thing for my fantasy Fireweed and Firebird, the Mangian Chronicles. Those are from personal experiences, but they're not anything I'm going through at the moment. I actually started writing those characters way back as a teenager, and they just kind of sat there for a while. And I suddenly was like, well, you know, I really would like to write something more high fantasy. So I brought them back up, kind of dusted them off and started going. But there was a t-shirt I once saw advertised on Facebook that I really liked to get. It says, I'm a writer, and anything you say, do, can be used against you in my next book. So anything in life I do tend to draw from. But to wrap it up, no, it's not always what I'm going through right that minute.
No, and it's funny, you know, things all around us, you know, I get a question a lot, and you may as well, like, where do you come up with ideas for all your stories? And, you know, I say, where don't I find ideas?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's stories going on constantly all around us. And, mm-hmm. and it, you know, writers, I think, see those stories as stories, not just as life going on.
Right.
Whereas I think a lot of people who aren't writers, who aren't creators, you know, whether it's sculpture or painting or writing or music or whatever, they don't see those stories. They see just life and,
exactly.
and just can't understand what's significant about it until someone creates something from it that reflects mm-hmm. it. And then they go, oh, wow, how did you even think of that?
Well, remember when you, a week ago, you said this, guess what? I snagged it. Yeah, I agree. I think there's so many things going on in the world. To not draw inspiration from even walking down the street is kind of amazing to me, but I'd also know that that's me. I have a very overactive imagination. I have since I was a little kid, and when I was a kid, I just read everything I could get a hold of. And like I said, music to me is a huge inspiration. If I'm driving and I have the music blared, I usually have a scene going on in my head with the music. So to me, yeah, anything going on in the world could inspire something. And meeting a new person, I mean, you never know when that's going to pop up in a book somewhere, because I do. I have a lot of my characters are drawn on people I know. May not be a total replica of that person, but I may draw traits from them. Because I just think the most inspirational thing in life is us. I mean, people just do some amazing things, whether it's great or stupid, but they do amazing things every day.
You know, I like to draw on conversational characteristics, you know, things that, you know, people's unique turns of phrases. Because I think that that's one of the things that makes characters endearing and memorable is mm-hmm. when they say something a certain way different from everyone else in the story.
Yes.
And so I tend to borrow those things from people I know and people I come in contact with. I think that's just a neat way to kind of honor the people I know and my friends and relatives and coworkers and whatnot, but to kind of give them an opportunity to live through in my book without actually putting them in the book.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. I totally agree. I think there was another phrase I saw one day said, you want to be immortal, have a writer fall in love with you, or something along those lines. And it's true. I mean, like you just said, you can memorize, you know, immortalize them in your work without even naming them. So I just think it's a really neat thing to be able to do.
You've mentioned music several times, and I'm curious, you know, is this something you share with your readers a lot? Because I can imagine, you know, kind of going back and forth and talking playlists with your readers to see what they listen to while they're reading, or do they have the same tastes?
Yes, it is something I actually talk a lot about with my readers. I actually had one reader suggest I make a YouTube channel for Lux, Veritas, all of them with playlists so that she can read it while listening to it. So it's actually something I'm going to start doing. But yeah, I share my playlists all the time, and I ask people for new music and I share new music. My range is everything from, you know, classical to classic rock to mainly hard rock and metal, but I also have Celtic and a little bit of pop and some rap, you know, so I love learning what my readers are listening to. And if someone associates a certain song with, you know, my book, I love hearing that too. I think that's just, that makes my day right there. Cause you know, it brought my book from them sitting there reading it to actually out in the world thinking about it, and they associate it with something. I think that's just an amazing compliment.
And it's funny, cause I tend to put playlists together when I start new projects. And it's very, usually a very eclectic playlist, but there are some times when I've got books with lots of fighting in them, and so I tend to put on like Celtic fiddle music for some reason speaks war to me.
Hey, I get it. I have Blackmoor Knight is a band I listen to, and they're not Celtic fiddle, but they're, you know, they're I consider them, I would anyways, Celtic-ish, and they're a lot in Fireweed and Firebird, my Mangian Chronicles. For fight scenes, for me, I typically have heavier metal, like Five Finger Death Punch or Korn or Slipknot. You know, they just seem to get me going. But for the third book in the Veritas series, Aquitus, I actually, Breaking Benjamin's album, A New Hope, I believe is what it's called, that whole album kind of goes with the whole book. So I just think it's cool. I know a lot of people draw a lot of different things from, like you just said, fiddle music works for your fight scenes. I think that's awesome. So I think it all depends on who you are, but inspiration comes from anywhere.
Yeah, and it's just for me, you know, it's lots of swords and sorcery kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it just seems like it fits into that time frame. But I can totally see. And actually, I wrote down Blackmoor Knight. I'm going to have to check that out. So always looking for new groups to listen to and find. So that's awesome.
Yeah, they're good. I like them a lot.
Cool. Do you, let's talk a little bit about Fireweed, because as you said, it's a different kind of book, and I haven't had a chance to start reading it, but just reading the description of that and the second book in that series, the Mangian Chronicles, really, you know, seems quite different from what you started with Lux and Veritas.
Yeah, so Fireweed and Firebird, they're both novellas, and they're the start of the Mangian Chronicles. Fireweed explains it. Well, let me back up a second. The Mangian Chronicles are about a world called Mangi, where you have a vampiric race and a magic-wielding race at odds with each other. They're not at war, but it's a very tense relationship. Fireweed goes into the vampire side, and it tells of a prophecy of Io, the fireweed. It's a plant, but also a person that ends up coming to them to deliver the vampires from their plight. There's dragons in it and fae and a whole bunch of different races. So that's what Fireweed focuses on, is the vampire side of it. But then Firebird, the next book, focuses on the Mangians, which are the wizarding side of the realm. You meet Arashi and Sita, who are two siblings who are next in line for the throne, but a palace coup happens and they find out that basically their evil stepmother, for lack of a better term, is pregnant, and she basically takes over and kicks them out, and they have to run for their lives. but you also, I introduce a whole new pantheon, and it's a very complex world, and I love building it. It's insanely different from Lux, but it's a great challenge for me, and I love fantasy, so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I see that in just how you describe that, and also what I've seen so far in Lux is, you know, you do seem to have this rich, this rich world texture to the way you write. And how much time do you spend kind of fleshing out that world, or do you kind of build the bare bones of it and then let it flesh itself out as you write?
Kind of a bit of both, as noncommittal as that is. Lux, like I said, I kind of just started on it and it kind of built itself, whereas the Mangian Chronicles, I actually sat down and drew out the pantheon. I have notebooks everywhere. So like I have probably about 6 different works in progress, and they're all different worlds and different, you know, everything. So that's the only way I can keep track. Otherwise I get myself all confused. So for the Mangian Chronicles, I actually sat down and did some research into names. Names to me are a big deal. I think, most of my characters all, well, yeah, I'd say 99% of my characters, their names have a deeper meaning into their character. So I wanted to do the same thing with the pantheon. And I draw a lot from where I come from in Maine. One of the high gods in Manji is Coburn, and that's actually a mountain up by where I grew up. But I really sat down and tried to flush all that out before I got to writing, because I really didn't want to contradict myself. And that's one of my biggest fears, is getting into something, you know, and 3 books into it, and suddenly I'm like, wait, I just totally wrote myself into a corner because I contradicted that pantheon. So I think it depends kind of on the project with me, which I know probably isn't a very good answer, but that really is how it goes with me.
No, I completely understand. And every now and then I find that I've written something, you know, contradicted something from an earlier book in one of my longer series. And
yeah,
and you know, my reaction when a reader catches it, because it, you know, you'd think it would happen more often. Like once it happens once, you go, oh well, everybody's gonna see it, obviously,
right?
And
yeah,
you don't hear from anybody for another 6 months or a year, and you're like, well, okay, maybe they aren't noticing it. But I always give the reader like a book of their choice. So like, you know, let me send you a book for finding this is pretty, you know,
right?
You win the prize.
Yeah, almost like a scavenger hunt. Yeah.
I treat it like that.
You were paying attention.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I like that. And it's like, I have another series I'm working on right now. It's a werewolf series. And again, I'm trying to flush that pantheon out, and because I'm taking from the Viking and Norse mythology, but also American Indian mythology. So combining those two and trying to make it work has been a little bit of a challenge, but I love it because I like challenges. So to try to make it all work has been fun, but it's done a lot of research, and I've learned a lot more than I ever thought I would, which to me is huge. So I take that as a win.
Oh yeah. And the way we learn stuff as writers, the rabbit holes you go down when you hit Google,
yes,
because you're like, oh,
yes,
I wonder how this thing works. I really should know a little bit about it. You know, an hour and a half later, you're
somewhere you never thought you'd
different.
Be. And you're like, how'd I get here? One of my best friends, another author, Francesca Vance, has the same issue. She'll go on YouTube and start looking up things, and you know, an hour later I'm like, so did you make any progress? She goes, no, I'm way down a rabbit hole I didn't even know that existed, so give me a minute. Just gonna do yourself back out. But I love it. I love the research aspect of it as much as the writing. So
yeah, I was searching for something on, I think, how shields were made in medieval times.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, like, I found myself an hour and a half later hitting print on a template for a kind of fancy paper airplane. Don't know how I ended up there, but you know, that's the danger as an author. You kind of go off on the side, get off on these tangents, but it's important. And I think none of it's lost. I always learn something when I go into those things, and I find out what I'm looking for, but I also find out a lot of other things that end up popping up in other stories or in the existing story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not lost time.
No, knowledge is power. So, you know, and it may not be for your current project, but you'll find a way to use it somewhere else.
So tell us a little bit about, like, you know, how you interact with readers. I know you talked about, you know, talking with them about playlists and things like that. Is there a preferred channel or method that you prefer reaching out to folks?
Sadly, it's mostly on Facebook. And I say sadly just because, you know, everything's on Facebook. And it's a horrible time waster for me because it's another one of those rabbit holes I can get digging around. And the next thing I know, I've been on the computer for an hour, and instead of writing, I've been, you know, clicking on posts and things. But I do have a Facebook group on there. Any of my readers are welcome to join. Then I try to interact daily on there. I have the Facebook page, but mostly on my wall. People will tag me and things, and I'll, you know, comment back. And I love it. I think it's great. And I love getting messages from people. It's kind of the highlight to know that someone new read one of my works and actually thought it was good. It's kind of like, wow, I'm not horrible at this. That's awesome.
Well, you know, so it is that question you ask yourself all the time, even though books have been out for a while and you've gotten numerous emails or contacts from people that said they enjoyed the books. You still wonder, you know, mm-hmm. is it connecting with people at the level that I want it to? And
right.
I don't know what it is. I think it's just common to authors in general to question our work. And maybe that's because we're always striving to do a little bit better and tell a better story. But, you know, it is what
yeah,
it
I'd
is.
Agree. And I think any artist, they want to reach someone at a deeper level than just face value. So to know that one of my scenes made someone cry as much as I don't want to make someone cry, it means a lot to me, because that means I hit an emotion I was aiming for. You know, I succeeded in what I was doing and made you feel something other than whatever's going on around you. So, and like you said, we always want to do better. I think that's just kind of a human condition. No matter what anyone says, you always want to strive for a better outcome than what you just did. So yeah, I love getting messages or posts or emails. Kind of makes me act like a little fangirl. Like,
that's okay. I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I've always thank the people that take the time to reach out to me, because they mm-hmm. didn't have to. Search me out and
exactly.
find my email or find my website or whatever and reach out to me that way. So I always am thankful. When you do reach out to people, you know, have you ever been to like an event in person where you've met anybody, or is that something you want to do at some point?
That's something I really want to do. Unfortunately, it hasn't been until recently I've seen all these events pop up. And by the time I see them pop up, it's always too late. So I'm really hoping next year, now that I know where they're kind of being held, I can start getting tickets early. But it is on my to-do list. I'd love to actually meet some people in person. Like, obviously, some people in Maine, I know they bought a book personally from me and I've dropped it off, or, you know, something like that. But to meet anyone else out there, that'd be amazing.
It's a lot of fun. I have to say I enjoy it. I don't want it to be something. I don't want it to turn into a job where
right.
I'm, you know, all I'm doing is traveling to cons. But I don't mind doing one or two a year, especially something that's local. You might check with your local library to see if they do events or things like that, because that's an easy one to do.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm considering. I mean, I moved to Springfield, Missouri in September, but unfortunately, I'm moving to Iowa very soon. Hopefully, my husband travels and he works on windmill turbines, so he got offered a job up there, so I'll be moving up there as soon as I get the green light. And I think that's one of the things I'm going to do. Des Moines is right half an hour away, and I have a feeling that's probably going to be a pretty good city to hit. So
oh, I would think so. And every city, it seems like nowadays, has some version of a Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're huge now.
You know, just connect with them, get a table and set up your books and see what
right?
people think, right?
Yeah, I'd be all excited about that. Although I'd be pretty nervous too. I'm a little awkward in person, not gonna lie.
you know, I tell you, it's. I think the readers feel more awkward than I do when I've gone to those events. You know, I have to kind of make myself come out of my shell a little bit and mm-hmm. actually engage people, because otherwise you can just kind of make eye contact and they'll keep going. So my thing is always to ask, what kind of books do you read?
Right.
Every time somebody makes eye contact with me, I smile and say, hey, what kind of books do you read? And if they like fantasy or sci-fi, I'm like, you should come over and check these out.
Right. These are right up your alley.
Yep. So I wish you luck on that. You have to reach out to me and let me know how that goes when you finally get that squared away.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely will.
So as we kind of get wrapped up here, what are you working on? You mentioned something about a werewolf story. I know, are the Mangian Chronicles and and the story with the Veritas series, are they just two book series, or are you planning on going farther with those?
Nope, I am going farther with all of them. Veritas series, I have the next book scheduled to come out fall of this year. It's called Aquitus, and that should wrap up the main arc in that series. However, I do have some other spinoffs kind of going with it. And as far as the Mangian Chronicles go, I have a lot more in store for that. Basically, the two novellas that begin that Chronicles are just to explain both sides of it. I felt like there needed to be a lot of background before I just jumped into the war book, which will be the next book. And let's see. Then I've got Route 201's a short story out there right now. It's a ghost story, and that takes place in Maine. But I am planning on expanding on that world a bit as well. I had a lot of good reviews on that story, so I kind of want to keep going with those adventures. I have the werewolf stories coming out called Beskeet, the Beskeet clan, what we spoke about. I also have the YA fantasy novel, which is a Viking based, and that actually is in memory of a friend that took his own life a few months ago. So all proceeds of that will be going to Under Your Scars, which is a nonprofit foundation for mental health awareness. And I believe I have another series. I had to think about it, which is more of a witch-based series, and that's going to be called Familiar. And that I hope to have out by December is my goal. We'll see if I can meet it. But I have a lot in store and a lot planned, and all those series are going to keep going.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely make sure we link to your author page and your Facebook group and everything in the show notes for this episode. And I would urge you, when the time comes for that YA book to come out that you're donating the proceeds from, reach out to me, and okay. We'll make sure we share it here on the show and get the word out about it so that folks can contribute. I think that's an important cause to give to.
Thank you. I do as well.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the fantasy-focused community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. When you get over there, leave a comment on this episode. Let me know what you think of the show, or if you have a question or anything for the author involved, you can do that as well. But check in and let us know. While you're over there, you can also subscribe to the show, so make sure you do that. You can subscribe via email, your favorite web app like Stitcher or something like that. You can always subscribe, so subscribe to the show so you don't miss any episodes. We have some great authors coming up, including Andrea Lumen on the next podcast, so check that out when it comes out. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book if you sign up for my newsletter while you're there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Come back here for the next podcast so you don't miss the next great author of fantasy books. In the meantime, I'll remind you, as I always do, to, hey, folks, keep your eyes open, because there's magic all around you.